from the Premier League. It's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. It was goals galore on the final day of the FPL season. We analyse this year's big winners, lessons that can be learnt, and begin the plotting to go again in August. Well, 380 matches complete, and what a way to finish it. Manchester City were crowned champions, Spurs got the final Champions League spot, and Burnley were relegated on what was a remarkable final day of the Premier League season. But most importantly of all, FPL has finished for another season. We hope you got the score you wanted in game week 38 and you can be victorious over your rivals. There is so much for us to look back on and also a little bit for us to look forward to as well. And I'm joined by three pod regulars to dissect it all. Firstly, welcome along to everyone's favourite Frenchman, Julien Leron. Hi, Jules.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, everyone.
Hello to FPL family's Lee Bonfield.
Hey, Kelly. Hi, everyone.
And the FPL legend, we call him the FPL GOAT from FPL Black Box. It is Mark Southerns. Mark, it is so good to have you back on the podcast.
Thank you, Kelly. Yeah, it's great to be here. Although the moniker of legend is getting less so every season, it seems.
Oh, come on, Mark.
This has been a season like no other, as we're about to talk about. Let's quickly reflect on the final day, because in terms of the Premier League, it was incredible. But also for us FPL managers too, 39 goals, comebacks and late drama. Now, Dejan Kulusevski was the game week's top scorer with 16 points. Some unlikely other high scorers in Manchester City's hero, Ilkay Gundogan, with 14 points. Arsenal's Cedric also scored big, whilst the usual suspects returned for us too. Son Heung-min, Harry Kane, Mo Salah from the bench and Andy Robertson. A crazy day. Jules, how did you take it all in and how did it affect your FPL team?
Yeah, it was crazy. I was at City and I had an eye on the game of City, of course, for work and for the title, but also on all my players in different teams. James Maddison scoring came good. 13 points was great for me. Kulusevski and Kane, we expected the big numbers from Spurs, but you never know, because they share everything, the three of them, certainly since January. So it was good to see Kulusevski and Kane having good numbers. And Ken as a captain. So yeah, it was an incredible, intense afternoon, really, where I think we all checked every game, every player, every scenario, everything. And hopefully I finished with 71 points, which is a really lovely way to end.
Yeah, solid score to end on, definitely. Kulusevski, we weren't really expecting him to be the Spurs attacker that went big, were we? Son had 485,000 transfers in. He was the most transferred in player of the game week. And Harry Kane was the fourth most transferred in, with over 330,000 managers bringing him in. What about you, Lee? Let's get it out of the way. We know you're a Liverpool fan, so I imagine today you're a little bit disappointed. But you told me you don't want to talk about the Reds. Do you want to talk about your FPL team instead?
Well, I will just reflect on the final day for a second, Kelly, because it was immense, wasn't it? It's immense. This is one of the best league in the world, in my opinion. It was so good. And a lot of the rhetoric leading up to the final game, it was, you know, we often get crazy-looking game week 38 with tons of goals. And boy, did it deliver. It was so good, wasn't it? But alas, from a Reds perspective, you know, I guess I didn't have very high expectations going into game week 38. I thought City would win. It's just the manner in which they won, right? It's the hope that kills you, right? 78 minutes in, Villa 2-0 up. I was backing Liverpool to get the goal that we needed, but little did I know that Messrs De Bruyne and Gundogan and others had their sights set on a 6-minute blitz of Aston Villa, which landed in the title. So sensational for them, and congratulations to City and to Pep, because what an unbelievable season they've had. From an FPL perspective, I must admit, I was so engrossed in the City and the Liverpool battle that I didn't really pay too much attention to what else was going on. So I got to 90 minutes, looked at my team, and I looked at the other scores, and I thought, well, Arsenal have got a hatful, so that's Saka and Nketiah are going to get me tons of points. Great. Looking around, I thought, well, Mason Mount, you know, Chelsea got a couple there against Watford. Mason Mount will be in the points. So I had players from the right teams, Kelly, but my players that I had just didn't deliver the goods. Saka got the assist and Nketiah got one. I was hoping for more from them from Arsenal. So all in all, my FPL season went out with a little bit of a whimper, I'm afraid to say. 49 points this week, but not too bad overall. Not too bad. 115K, so okay.
Mark, it was a chaotic final day and it felt like that was quite emblematic of the season that we've had. Chaos in terms of FPL this season. So many ups and so many downs as well. It's been really hard, hasn't it, for FPL managers?
Yeah, it's been a season of extremes, really. And I guess it was, again, all the Tottenham assets return, Son, Kulusevski and Kane. I had Son and Kane. I'd sold Kulusevski going into 37 and got Zaha in for the double, and he did it right. He scored on the final day. So I don't think I lost too much there. But it was just the nature of having 10 games on at once. Right? That's completely new for FBL managers, and having all that, all the points coming at once and events going off everywhere, all around the grounds, that is always hard to deal with on the final day. But it's actually quite a nice little treat because we don't get that during the season, of course. So yeah, there's always going to be chaos on the final day. In terms of my FBL score, I had to go for it. I had to roll the dice. I had Son, but I captained Kane for a bit of a differential. I took an 8-point hit, which didn't work out. I got in Mount, I got in Sessegnon, I got in Tony, and Mount and Tony didn't return anything, which I expected something from Chelsea in particular. Mount, I think he had a very good game and had many chances, but I should have gone Maddison there, as it turns out. But that's been the tale of my season. Picking the wrong players, that's... Picking the wrong players is never a good idea, is it, in FBL? I've played it long enough.
It's a skill, that, Mark.
Yeah. So, you know, you can have that one for free, Kelly. But yeah, it's been one of those seasons for me where I've maybe just gone on the 50-50, just gone the wrong way. And you can look at something like Mount or Maddison as being another one of those. And it's been that kind of season where some managers have ridden out those that variance and others have suffered from it. And throughout the season, it's been some extreme results, some massive scores when you've gone the wrong way on a 50-50. I think more so than any other season that I've experienced.
A season like no other, I think it's fair to say, but a brilliant season nonetheless. Well, before we move on to delve deeper into the season's high and low points, it is time to reveal our mini league winner. So a huge congratulations to Soldiers of Sondre, who won by just 1 point. Do spare a thought, though, for Adrian in second place, as he also got 90 points, the same as Soldiers of Sondre's manager, Sondre Haug. But he sold Saka and Ruben Diaz for Bowen and Alonso, which unfortunately cost him first place. We've all been there, haven't we? Where we try and roll the dice, we make a big decision, and losing by 1 point lead, you feel his pain.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, fair play to him for going for it. I mean, when you're up there on the final game week, you've got to go for it. To lose out by a point is, hard lines. But fair play. Listen, nothing to be sniffed at. Anybody up there is had a fantastic season. So congratulations to everybody.
Congratulations also to our third placed manager, Curious Jorginho, Darren Price. He got 72 points in game week 38 to finish third. Fourth place, it was Dusan Mihailovic. And in fifth place, Jonathan Hoare. So thank you to everyone who took part in our mini league this year. We will, of course, have another one for you next year. So keep your eyes peeled and make sure you join. Well, let's start our look back on the overall 21-22 season by saying a huge congratulations to the overall winner of the entire game, Football is Life, managed by Jamie Piggott. He is based in America and he got a total of 2,844 points, finishing 12 points ahead of second place Suvansh Singh and 14 points ahead of Brett Taylor. He first entered the top 1,000 after game week 20 and remained there for all but 1 week. He even reached 32 in the world at one point, dropping down to 1,114th after his free hit in 33. However, the usage of three more chips in the next four rounds put him in first place heading into the final day by just 1 point, and he held on to win the entire game. Mark, this is what we all dream of, isn't it? This is huge for Jamie.
I've never seen that before. Like, to be 1,000 in the world in game week 33 and then to win it is an incredible performance. Mm. I mean, obviously the chips, but game week 36, when he got 201 points, he came 310th in the world for that game week, and that pushed him into the top 10. And obviously from there, you've got a chance. But that's an incredible turnaround. If I'd have looked at his team in game week 33 and him ranked 1,114, wouldn't have given him a chance of winning it. You just wouldn't think you'd have a chance, would you? Because previously, if you look at the winners' records, they've always been in the top 50 from about the halfway stage and worked their way down. Or if they've come late, it's been from around 200 and something, not from 1,000. It's crazy what he's achieved there with that late run. I mean, that really does hopefully set a template for future seasons. Like, even if you're some way out, you've still got a chance with five or six game weeks to go if you've got chips up your sleeve. I guess that's what the chips are for, right, to give you that chance. But he's played them brilliantly. And on the final day, just a word about Savanes, who came second. He made a transfer getting in Diaz, selling Coutinho for an extra hit. If he hadn't have done that, he'd have won one FBL. I sold Coutinho as well. What were the chances of Coutinho getting something at Man City when he blanked so often going into that game as well? So not only was it a tough fixture, his output over previous game weeks has been really poor. So Diaz in for Coutinho looked like a sensible move.
Looked good on paper, didn't it?
Yeah. And yet, if he hadn't have done that, if he hadn't have made that extra transfer, he made three transfers in the game week, and that was the third one, it seems, he would have won FBL. And also, if Gelhardt's goal hadn't have been disallowed, he'd have won FBL. So there's all kinds of... Yeah, I know. I mean, we have these moments in our season where it, you know, costs us a bad game week or a good game week, but in Savanis' shoes, he really has had... some bad luck there on the final day. But obviously Jamie with the late surge deserves to win it, arguably, doesn't he?
Yeah, still a remarkable effort from all of those guys that finished in the upper echelons of the FPL ranks. An incredible effort throughout the season. Let's now reflect on the top and some of the lower scorers of the season. Now, the top scorers overall were Mo Salah with 265 points, then Son Heung-min, 258, Trent Alexander-Arnold on 208, Jared Bowen, 206, and Joao Cancelo on 201. All of the usual suspects, the players that by the end of the season, Jules, for us, were kind of essential, apart from maybe Jared Bowen, because a few managers were put off when West Ham went deep into Europe.
Yeah, that's right. I think the names on that list are all FPL royalty, really. Must-haves, certainly if you can have as many as them in your team. But Bowen is maybe the slightly surprised one in that list, in the sense that, you know, on the back of a good season last year, this was even better. He clearly went a step up. He was so decisive, so efficient, not just, you know, but so clinical, and you kind of knew there was that run, didn't he, before his injury, between the end of the year and the turn of the year, where he, every game you knew he was going to score. I remember, I think we all captained him for game week 21 because they played Norwich, I think, and he returned 42 or 45 points, something like that, which was crazy. And I remember us saying on the show, you know, this is, you know, he has to be the star of your team this week because he's on such a good form. And I wonder even how many points he would have got without the injury. So, well done to Jared Bowen and to West Ham for a really good season. But yeah, he was one of the surprise players in the league, I think, this season.
Let's go through positionally, starting in goal with the top scorers, just to reflect on the players that have come out on top. We can't argue it. They got the most points in goal. Alisson, Lloris, Ederson, Saar and Fabianski were the top five in that order. Showing there, Lee, that if you do spend a bit more on your goalkeepers, you're going to get more points.
Yeah, I think you get what you pay for in goal in FPL this season. I think generally speaking, that's not necessarily the FPL manager's go-to, is it, in game week one? You don't necessarily go for an Alisson or an Ederson. You do get some FPL managers, and Sam is one of them. She likes the kind of the Alisson, the Ederson, the Lloris, and then the 4.0 kind of, you know, you burn a spot in your goalkeeper position there. I'm not like that. I prefer to find the kind of 4.5 rotators, the 5.0 rotators. And certainly early on in the season, I thought Sanchez was offering pretty good value, to be fair. And latterly, you had kind of David Raya in spells, you know, had a really good season. But largely speaking, when all said and done, it looks as if the strategy to pick one and stick with it was the way to go. I guess the other thing that was putting me off was that at Liverpool and Spurs and Man City, we also had some really good defensive options, right? And maybe this is a nice segue to the next piece, but you've got Cancelo and Trent, and latterly you had kind of Sessegnon and others for Spurs. So the sort of propensity to want to double up in FPL wasn't quite there, particularly the same at Chelsea. Right? I don't think anybody was really going for Mendy because they'd have Reece James or Alonso or Rudiger in your team for large periods of the season. So yeah, I mean, maybe that's a lesson we can take into next season, is that rather than looking for those 4.5 rotators, maybe it is just better to have an Alisson or an Ederson or a Lloris and somebody and stick with it the whole season.
If only Ederson was on penalties for Manchester City, as we once dreamed of as well. Imagine how many points he could have got then. Mark, what's your strategy when it comes to goalkeepers? And when you see those points totals, do you think that maybe managers do need to adopt this strategy more to put a bit more money in their keepers?
Yeah, my strategy is normally, you know, typical of an FPL manager who's played the game a few seasons, and that you go for a cheaper goalkeeper. You might go to 5 million, but you're not going to go higher than that. But, you know, looking at these numbers, it is food for thought because, you know, Alisson's out there on top with a figure of 176, which is, you know, it would put him fifth in the defenders table in terms of points as well, behind Van Dijk, Robertson, Cancelo and Trent. So, you know, it compares well. You get good value there for your 6 million outlay. But I think it's like Lee says, it's about tying up the slots. You only get three slots to Liverpool. And then, you know, if you're using one as your goalkeeper and you've got one as Trent, you've only got one attacking slot, which over the season you're going to think, well, that's going to be a problem to me because I might want to get two Liverpool midfielders, or next season perhaps a Liverpool forward and a midfielder. So it's the same for City as well. You don't want to tie up a slot with a goalkeeper for City or Liverpool. Now, if you look at teams like Chelsea or Spurs, perhaps that is going to be a possibility. I think for next season, that's what I'll look at, is that teams who perhaps don't have attacking assets or enough attacking assets to make me think I'm going to want three of them over some point in the season, I could consider the goalkeeper. And if you look at Chelsea in particular this season, they haven't really been flush with attacking options that we wanted. You know, Mount maybe, you know, at time Lukaku for a period, but it's mainly been Reece James and Chilwell and Alonso that we've looked at. So it's mainly been a defence. So I think definitely I will take these numbers and look at that next season and consider goalkeepers that perhaps I wouldn't have done in ordinary seasons and are more an outlay.
In defence then, the top scorers again won't be too much of a surprise. Trent Alexander-Arnold was the highest scoring defender with 208 points, closely behind, 7 points behind in fact, Joao Cancelo with 201, Andy Robertson, then Virgil van Dijk, then Joel Matip, Aymeric Laporte, Antonio Rudiger and Matty Cash. I've gone a bit further down there just to show how high up the Villa fullback was as well. There's a lot of fullbacks in that list, isn't there, Jules? And a lot of Liverpool.
Yeah, that's right. I remember one of the first shows of the season where we said, you know, maybe the way forward is no centre-backs in your team. Just go for fullbacks, because we suspected that burst of creativity from them, and certainly Cash, Reece James, Cancelo, and again, James has been injured as well, and Trent especially, have done a lot of that, Robertson too. So it was great, and I think we foresaw it a little bit. It's just, I think Cancelo and Trent are just aliens in this game, in football in general.
In a good way.
And I think in a very good way. It's just incredible what they've achieved in terms of points for our game, of course, but in general. And again, for next season, it'd be very interesting to see the dynamic. Can they do this again, you know, at that kind of level? Again, that creativity, the output, all the points then within the game as a result, it'd be quite fascinating to see. And if maybe others can do, can Matty Cash step up even more now with Gerrard in a full season and a full preseason, maybe a better team? Can he go higher? It'd be very fascinating to follow.
I kind of feel like had Reece James and Ben Chilwell not spent so much of the season injured, they would definitely be in that list. And it makes me excited for their FPL prospects next season. It also makes me quite sad to think that we won't have Antonio Rudiger in the Premier League next season, because he's been a brilliant way into that Chelsea defence, hasn't he, Lee? If you don't want to spend quite as much on Chelsea and you couldn't stretch to Reece James, I've said it a few times on the FPL show this season, I'm a cautious manager, so I always went for Rudiger. That did mean I would sometimes miss out on Reece James's hauls. But those numbers, 150 points for Antonio Rudiger, he's been a brilliant option.
Ah, he's been so good, yeah. So consistently good, as you said before, always bringing home the bacon in terms of clean sheets. And this was actually an interesting dynamic between Sam and I earlier on in the season. She was quite keen on just the regular 6-pointers from Rudiger, whereas I was taking the, you know, chasing the upside, if you like, with Reece James. And I remember a few weeks in a row, Rudiger was just popping up in the penalty area every 5 minutes. He was so attacking. He was getting on the end of corners, on the end of set pieces, popping up with tap-ins every now and again, going on little adventures as he'd bring the ball out of defence through midfield and kind of having pop shots from all over the place. I remember one or two pretty good goals that he scored this season. So, yeah, Rudiger for me has been the Chelsea defender of choice. Now, of course, Reece has popped up with the odd double-digit haul, hasn't he? But he's also, you know, you take the rough with the smooth with Reece James, you're going to get 2-pointers in there as well. But Rudiger, for consistency, and as we, you know, got towards the middle of the season, for goal threat as well, he was so good. So good. So we will miss him in FPL for sure.
Yeah, thank you, Antonio. If you happen to be listening to this on your flight out of London, thank you for all the FPL points you have provided us with. Into midfield then, Mo Salah, the overall top scorer in the game with 265 points. Then it's Son Heung-min, Jared Bowen, Kevin De Bruyne, Sadio Mane. That's the top five, closely followed by James Maddison, Bukayo Saka, Diogo Jota, Mason Mount, and I could go on. There's been some brilliant options in midfield this year, Mark, and it's felt like a lot of the time when the forwards haven't been delivering, midfield is where we should have been putting our money.
Oh yeah, I mean, we wanted more than five slots, haven't we, over the season? And I think formations have changed as we've gone to be like 4-5-1 or 3-5-2. The idea of having a budget midfielder only really came back into fashion at the end of the season, when perhaps like Gordon with his double game weeks became a factor. But before that, I think it's, you know, fully stock your midfield with as many heavy hitters as you can. And I think that will be the trend going into next season. I don't think many of us will start with a budget midfielder. I think it's more likely we will go budget in attack and stock up the midfielder. And quite rightly, because the numbers for a number of seasons now have suggested that's the way to go. Salah and Son, if they remain midfielders, will be hot properties again, as will Bowen. And then you go down the list and you expect players like Saka to kick on further, don't you, next season? So he's going to be in high demand. There's always going to be that talent. That is the engine room of our teams now, quite literally, is our midfields. That's where we rely on for our captaincy. And that's where the major points come from. And this season it's been like that more than any other, I would say.
Let's move on to the forwards then. This bit shouldn't take quite as long because it has been really disappointing in this position this season. In fact, only two forwards are inside the top 25 overall scorers in FPL. They are Harry Kane with 192 points, Cristiano Ronaldo with 159, then Teemu Pukki, Mikel Antonio and Ivan Toney. And Jules, until Harry Kane found form in the second half of the season, it was so hard to know who to pick up from, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. He had such a torrid start of the season, really. The campaign, we talked a lot about it because I had him and I had a lot of faith, and we had that father and son kind of relationship that annoyed me a lot of the time because he kept having those 2 points returned. But incredible when you think that at times a lot of us have struggled to think, okay, who are we going to go up front with? You know, there was a lot of debate, I'm sure, for all the players on like, okay, who we go next? And Toney had some good games, nine again, and we had the Richarlison ones, of course, and we had at the beginning Lukaku. I think there's a few of us believe that. I remember, I think, even almost convincing Mark to invest in Lukaku right at the beginning. Game week 2 and 4 were great, and after that, it was rubbish. So it was just like one of those seasons, you know, where it was a struggle for the strikers.
Don't forget, Jules, about Antonio, though. I think early on in the season in particular, he was great for us, wasn't he? Really good value. But latterly in the season, really fell away a little bit, didn't he, Antonio? Had a little bit of a swan song at the end there, but it was really Bowen was the go-to for West Ham. But I've actually enjoyed that part of FPL this season, trying to find the strikers, the right strikers at the right time with the right pricing, etc. Yet, yes, of course, Kane was an easy go-to. Ronaldo, we were kind of hopping on and off a little bit, weren't we? Antonio at the beginning. But outside of that, it was about trying to find the value to fill those three spots. And, you know, even if you look at overall points scored, yes, Kane and Ronaldo 1 and 2, but I think third was Pukki. So I think going into next season, there's a certain Norwegian that might mix that up a little bit at Manchester City. But outside of that, I think Mark's right. We're going to be back trying to find the value up front, aren't we, more than anything?
Just before we move on, Mark, Cristiano Ronaldo, the second top scorer in the forward bracket. Did that surprise you when you saw that?
No, not really. I think when he arrived, you had to see Ronaldo up there with the highest point scores in the game, and you anticipated that. I anticipated Lukaku would be joining him, but it hasn't happened. Mm. I guess the frustration with Ronaldo is consistency. He hasn't had a spell, sustained spell, perhaps more than 4 or 5 game weeks. I think from game week 33, 29 to 33, he got a good score. He got a couple of hat-tricks, of course. That was when you wanted him. But it's been very difficult to pin down the exact time to have him. And because he's so expensive and because we wanted to invest money in midfield, it's been difficult to hold him over the entire season. You want to move off him and back to him. And I think, you know, the managers who have done well this season are the managers like Lee says, who have played the forwards really well and have chosen, you know, moved off Antonio, moved to Ronaldo at the right time, moved to perhaps Pukki and Toney at the right time. Toney had a good end to the season. If you got that right, then you profited. It's been very, very difficult to pick a forward line and stick with a couple of strikers for the whole season and benefit from returns consistently. It's just not been there. But Ronaldo has done what we expected. He's threatened to be amongst the top tier players, perhaps not to the same extent that I expected when he arrived, but still good showing from Ronaldo.
Yeah, well, hopefully next season there'll be a little bit more consistency in the forward areas. So those are the top scoring players by position. Let's now move on to moments of the season. So I've heard Jesse Marsh say quite a few times before and after Leeds survived in the Premier League on Sunday that football is all about moments, and it's definitely the same in FPL. What springs to mind, Jules?
Well, there's a few things, and when you look again at your teams, like preparing for the show all along, there's some big moments. You all laughed at me before game week 4 when I said Aaron Ramsdale would do well. All of you.
I knew that was coming.
You knew he'd bring that up.
I've kept that show forever. You all laughed at me, and he returned really well for a period of time. Okay, the end of the season was maybe not as good, but he was certainly one of the surprised earlier in the season. That was great. We mentioned the Bowen captain at some point, had the Cancelo captain too in game week 18 against Newcastle when they won 4-0 away from home, where he had a goal and assist, and that got me 36 points. So those little moments are always nice when you reflect on how your season went.
What about you, Lee? Come on, we've given Jules his opportunity there to show off about Aaron Ramsdale. This is your time.
When he mentioned game week four, I could think about it was the Antonio red card. That was game week four, wasn't it?
Yeah,
wasn't it? Three back-to-back double-digit hauls followed by a red card. What's all that about? That was a moment for me. Not necessarily a good one, but one that'll live long in the memory. And a lot of my good moments this season orient around my chips action. I think back to game week 19. It was Spurs versus Palace at the Spurs Stadium. Spurs won 3-0. And I played my first free hit chip. And I bought in Lucas Moura as a little bit of a differential. Ended up getting, what did he get here? Let me see. One goal, two assists, three bonus points for a 17-point haul. And at the time, he was, I think, less than 1% owned, certainly less than 2 or 3%. A real differential. And then if I fast forward to more recent times, I captained Kevin De Bruyne for the four-goal haul at Wolves, which was incredible, incredible performance from Kevin De Bruyne. And then in the next game week, in game week 37... And I know, Jules, this is one that will live long in your memory. I captained Richarlison that week for his haul. So I was very happy with that. Got me inside the top 100K. But yeah, you triple captained, Jules, didn't you? Not that you've mentioned that at all.
No, I was not going to.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, I'm humbled.
I set him up for it and he didn't do it.
I thought that was what he was going to mention. Yeah.
I was going to wait for all of you to say, oh, by the way, I forgot the triple captain, Richarlison, game week 37. What was nice, there's a lot of listeners, and thank you for all the messages, who sent and said, oh, well done, Jules, you said it, et cetera, et cetera. So it's one of those. I made a lot of wrong calls on captains and chips through the season, but that one worked out nicely.
Were any of those nice messages from anybody on this podcast, Jules? Unlikely, I'd suggest.
Very unlikely, especially from the presenter.
I was going to say, there was no message from me, that's for sure. I just braced myself for the next time he was on the podcast, which is today. Mark, what about you then? There's been some real high points this season. I know you said it's been a difficult season, but you must have got some decisions right.
No, my memorable moments of the season the most memorable is when things went wrong for me, to be honest. And it started spectacularly with game week three. I had Ferran Torres, if you remember, at the start of the season. And I bought him because they had Spurs away and then Norwich at home. And I thought, I reckon he's going to play both of those. So I got him in, kept him for the Norwich at home. City won 5-0 when he got nothing from that game. And then I fell in love with Lukaku on the back of the performance against Arsenal and Jules selling him to me. I'm blaming Jules for this totally. So I then took a hit to get Torres out and get Lukaku in. And Torres' next game was against Arsenal, and it wasn't certain he was going to play. And we decided on Black Box, what we do is we wouldn't know any of the scores, and then we'd go live and stream, seeing Match of the Day for the first time with all the points coming in. And I didn't know when I tuned into Match of the Day that night and streamed live how Torres would have got on. City won 5-0 and Torres got 19 points. And so live on camera, my reaction was cool. And of course, that was an absolute disaster for me. And Lukaku from then on didn't deliver like I expected. And that kind of was the tale of my season. But that was an incredible memorable moment from it. Because sometimes it is that. Sometimes when luck goes against you, it's quite amusing because it's so extreme that you remember that forever. And I think I'll remember that Torres return off the back of selling him forever. It'll be a memory, you know, of FBL history.
I'm just going to throw in a few others here, and maybe you guys also had these players. In game week 9, Chelsea had Norwich at home. This is when we thought that Chelsea were going to potentially be in the title race as well. They won 7-0. Over 360,000 managers brought Kai Havertz in. I was one of them.
Oh, yes.
Anyone else?
Oh, yes.
He was the only starter to blank in that game.
Crazy.
That was incredible. He played false nine as well, didn't he? Everything was set for him to get the points. 7-0, no points. It was incredible.
And what did Salah do that week? Hat-trick at Old Trafford.
Yeah, went off, right? Yeah.
24 points, 3 goals and 1 assist during their 5-0 win at Manchester United. Also that week,
incredible.
I'm going to mention this because there wasn't many high points for Watford. Josh King got a hat-trick at Everton, and no, I know no one had him. Talking of Watford, another moment that I know will make you smile or wince, depending on how you're now feeling about it. Game week 23, over 1.2 million managers captained Emmanuel Dennis for his double game week. I was at this game watching this in the flesh, and he was sent off in his first match, getting a -1 for the double. Anyone else have him?
Yeah, I had that. It's like I say, memories of the season, really. It's those moments where you have to look back and laugh, really. Yeah, exactly. It's not, but I think that you've got to take the rough of the smooth as an FPL manager. That's what I mean. It's like, you know, that's what it's about. Next season's a new challenge. But, you know, if you have some bad luck, you've just got to not take it to heart and go and roll with it and laugh when you look back at it. And that's the point of playing the game.
I'm going to throw in just a couple more because I really enjoyed having this little trip down memory lane. Game week 26, over 1 million managers used a triple captain chip on Mo Salah, who got 28 points, yes. 3 goals and 1 assist. Pleased to say I had him. Did you guys?
I had that one. Yeah, no. Hand up here. Yeah.
Well done.
Oh, sorry, Mark. Oh, sorry, Jules. Just me and you on that one. Well, there's been so many good moments, hasn't there? And we haven't just asked our panellists that are on the podcast today. We are a team here on the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. We asked our panellists to send us their best moments of the season, and this is what they said.
Hi, it's Az here. It's been great being on the FPL pod. My personal highlight has to be in Game Week 33 when I bought in and captained Bruno Guimaraes. I think his ownership was something like 0.1%. And I'd watched a few games of his before and just thought he was a really class player with 2 home games. I wasn't expecting the returns he got, but when he did, I was absolutely delighted.
Hello, this is Vicky Sparks, and my personal FPL moment of the season was surviving relegation just from my most competitive head-to-head league. Packed full of work colleagues, managed to pull off the great escape, very proud of the second half of the season. And Harry Kane and Son, they've been the stalwarts through this side. And they did the business.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Faduba. My personal FPL moment of the season was probably triple captaining Mo Salah in the game week where he turned it on in style. Probably saved my season in many mini leagues. Double game week, he absolutely killed it. My personal FPL moment of the season.
Hello, this is Duncan Alexander.
The thing this season which I loved was my son playing FPL properly for the first time and seeing his joy when his triple captain of Jamie Vardy came in, and also his despair when he forgot deadlines, which they have to learn, and hopefully he has for next season.
Hi everyone, it's Sam here from the FPL family. My highlight of the season has got to be back in game week number 9. The average that week was just 64 points. My team returned 128 points. It was one of those weeks where every single player returned with the exception of one, and that was Harry Kane. But from every other player, we had returns. I had Sanchez in goal for 4, Rudiger with 9, Trent Alexander-Arnold with 10, Livramento with 9. Salah was my captain that week. He got 48, Damari Gray with 5, Jota with 11, Foden with 18, Jimenez with 5, Antonio with 7. Just Kane letting me down, but what a phenomenal game week. It's the kind of game week that FPL managers dream of.
Hi, it's Matt Holland here. My personal FPL highlight of the season has been difficult to find because they've been few and far between. But in game week 26, I did triple captain Salah when they played Norwich and Leeds. And in those two games, he got 3 goals, an assist and 5 bonus points that racked up 84 points for me. So that was a rare success this season.
Hello, listeners. This is Tom Williams.
My personal FPL moment of the season was the inspired decision I made when playing my wild card in game week 28 to bring in and captain Reece James for Chelsea's double game week that week. He promptly chipped in with 18 points, which I was pretty pleased with. But then he got injured, missed the second game of the double game week away at Norwich, and didn't reappear for another 6.5 weeks.
Hi, this is Adrian Clark. Game week 37 was definitely my favourite moment of the season because just as my younger brother Alex was closing in on me at the top of our family mini league, winding me up big time on the WhatsApp group, my team pulled out its first triple-digit score of the entire campaign. Get in. I spent most of the season avoiding Everton players, but I had brought Richarlison in. I'd captained him, and he came up trumps with 38 points. Cheers for having me on the pod again this season, though, guys. Absolutely loved it.
Hi, it's Ian Irving. I think the best transfer decision that I made this year and the one I've taken the most pleasure from was bringing in Andrew Robertson back in game week 16. At the time, it was a huge gamble considering everyone had Alexander-Arnold and Salah, and a lot of people were on Diogo Jota. But I ignored Jota, went with Robbo, and he's repaid me back nearly every single week since. To cap it off with the final goal of Liverpool's season was great as well. He's not quite helped me get where I need to be in my mini leagues and in my overall rank, but I think from this campaign, he's my favourite.
Well, thanks to our pundits for sending those in and for all of their contributions throughout this season. We're going to end this section of review by talking about the lessons we have learned. We've also asked this on @officialFPL and we had so many responses. The first one, Andy Martin, Salah isn't essential. Discuss, Lee.
Ooh, that's risky. That's risky. I mean, it depends on which half of the season you're talking about, right? Don't forget, here's a guy that absolutely ripped it up in the first half of the season, was as essential as you can get, you know, delivering big triple captaincy hauls, et cetera, et cetera. Then wasn't quite the same player, I'll admit, coming back from the African Cup of Nations. He was, you know, still pretty good, but not quite Salah first half of this season good. So I think it's a bit bold to say he isn't essential. And I don't see that he's going to, I don't see that he decreases in price next year, to be honest with you. So let's see. Is he going to be essential next season? There's going to be some other big hitters we're going to want, aren't there? So, he'll always be essential to me, Kelly.
I guess maybe the theory with that is that there is more options in that Liverpool attack now. And we have seen him rested, whereas before it felt like even if he had two broken legs, Klopp would have maybe stuck them back on so that he was playing. Whereas the options of the likes of Luis Diaz, a bit cheaper, players like that have maybe opened up other options in that Liverpool attack. Jules, do you think that's where Andy's coming from?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's fair. And I think Luis Diaz will be very, very interesting next season. See his price to start with and see what kind of status he has in that team too, because he was so important for them, even if in terms of returns, I think he could have had more goals and assists even, but he creates so much that once he gets more even settled in that team, you can expect the returns to start flowing even. So I think it's certainly something to keep in mind. And yeah, maybe Salah is just, it's not the first go-to guy when you're going to build your team. Maybe you can think a little bit outside of the box slightly.
Don't forget, though, Mo Salah was the top scorer in FPL again this year. A few more tweets then. FPL Corf says, stop falling for the double game week dream. No chance will I ever have double Watford attack again. FPL Corf, Watford got relegated. You don't need to do that. Do be careful, though. Fulham have a double game week next season, or maybe Bournemouth. Raheem says, form over fixture for mids and attackers. This now extends to premium defenders too. This is a tricky one, isn't it, Mark? Form over fixture. It's a constant debate, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think one of the things I haven't done as well this season is use fixtures in my decision making. I'm kind of split on this still about which you go with. I mean, many people say that form isn't even a thing, and in many ways, fixtures is what creates that form. It can give a player a sudden upturn in form because they have an easier run of fixtures. So I'm not buying into that. If anything, I'm going to strengthen the role that fixtures play in my decision making next season, because I think I've slightly erred away from that this time, and it obviously hasn't fared well for me.
Another tweet that came in from Trent says, take more risks on differential captains. Jules, have you sent that in?
No, I should have, to be fair. Did I mention my Richarlison triple captain in game week 37, bringing me 57 points?
Just the six times.
Oh, I've just given him an open goal there, haven't I? Open goal. Thanos says, Son will always be a better FPL asset than Kane. I'm not sure we've got enough time on this podcast to discuss this, but yes, Son has had a better season this year. But do you think, can you see that happening again next year, Jules?
I don't know. This is partly because Kane, I think, took a long time to digest the transfer that never happened to Man City. And I think that's why, added to the fact that it was Nuno as a coach who should have never been there, this is why he struggled. But it took longer, I think, to go back to his normal self than maybe a lot of us expected. I think next season, especially if Conte is there, I can see Kane just picking up where he left towards the second half of this season. But Son will be great, of course, as well next season too.
FPL Yogi says, get on the template early and work your way patiently from there. And I'm going to end on this one because Oliver Wilson, I think, has a similar problem to you, Lee. He said, don't introduce your girlfriend to FPL. She's currently beating me 2 years since starting. I can't believe I haven't asked you. Who won out of you and Sam this year?
Oh, well, firstly, I feel your pain, Oliver. It's way too late for you, mate. It's way too late. I did this year. I did. So Sam had a bit of a falling away after her second wildcard. She made the switch that a lot of people did. She went away from Son on her second wildcard to go towards Kulusevski and Kane because they were the hot properties at the time. And then, of course, things reversed and Son just blitzed it in the final few game weeks of the season, didn't he? So, yes, for the first time in 5 years, hashtag Team Lee is victorious in the FPL family.
Nice.
Well, congratulations. We are, of course, impartial on this podcast because we love both you and Sam equally. But as you're on today, Well done. Anyway, that's probably the tip of the iceberg when reflecting on this season, but there is still time on the podcast for us to have a quick look ahead to next season. So some all-important dates for your diary. The fixtures for next season will be released on Thursday, the 16th of June, with the 22-23 season starting on the weekend of the 6th of August. Do keep an eye on PremierLeague.com for that, and of course, for all of the latest news on FPL. But what could next season bring? Which teams do you think we'll be looking out for? Which teams are you tipping to have good starts to next season, Jules?
That's a big question. I need to focus amongst the promoted side, and I really hope that Forrest and Mar get promoted. That would even bring him even more emotion to him in the game, because he would be tempted so often to bring Forrest players in. It'd be hard to overlook the big boys, and that would be the fine. And we will discuss Haaland in a little bit, but already in my head I've got the angel saying, wait a little bit before Haaland, and the devil in my head going like, you love Haaland, he's going to be great, bring him on straight in. So I think a lot of us would be a bit like that. But yeah, I think it'd be very interesting. You know, would Leicester have a better season, for example? What about Crystal Palace under Patrick Vieira and the young players like Eze, yes, like Olise, those kind of guys? Where will Wilfried Zaha play, for example? So there's a lot of things that we need to look very carefully at the weekend. And like one of the mentioned from Twitter, Kelly, that you read, start early. I made a mistake, I think, last summer to not prepare well enough for the team, and I had a really bumpy start of the season. So I think the sooner you can really look into your team, the better, especially with the early start of the season.
Mark, when do you start looking at your team and planning for next season? You've been doing this for a very long time, and you're one of the high finishers that we have on this podcast. When does planning begin?
I started yesterday, to be honest.
Yeah. Wow.
Good answer.
Well, I mean, when you've had a bad season, you've got to start looking forward immediately. So I'm already thinking about it. Yeah. I mean, it's you've got to look at the teams coming up, because they're going to be absolutely critical. We saw Pukki and Tony farewell in terms of forwards, and Dennis farewell in terms of forwards this season. So you've got to expect some of the players, particularly Mitrovic, will do well next season. But there's also others on offer. And also you've got to look at, like you mentioned, teams that are going to improve. And Palace is certainly one I've got my eye on. Newcastle, we haven't mentioned them yet. What are they going to do? They're going to bring in some new exciting talent to the Premier League, I'm sure. And players like Trippier, who started well this season, are going to be factors next season, you know, in terms of players we want to consider for our defence. So, I hope there's going to be an influx of new talent into the Premier League that is going to shake things up. I hope that, you know, the Diaz pricing working with Salah is going to give us a dilemma, Son and Kane, dilemma there. So I'm looking forward to it very much. But yeah, it starts now.
Wow. I'm already a day behind, Lee, that means. We need to get sorting with these teams. A couple of other things to mention. Jules mentioned there, Haaland, we're expecting him to be incredibly popular, I'd imagine, at Manchester City. It's quite a scary prospect as to how good they're going to be with this forward that everyone said they've been missing this season. But also Erik ten Hag coming in at Manchester United. Potentially, we haven't looked at Manchester United options since earlier in the season, really. Maybe there'll be people on our radar from the red side of Manchester too.
Yeah, there absolutely could, because, you know, there's a lot of players at Manchester United that don't become bad players overnight. You know, let's not forget how good Bruno Fernandes was for us once upon a time in FPL. Just because he's not really quite hit those heady heights this season doesn't mean that he can't be a factor for us under Erik ten Hag. And you know, you've got to respect what Ten Hag has done already at Manchester United. He's come in and he said, OK, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, you know, you've got to go somewhere else. And he's obviously already eyeing up who he wants and who he doesn't want in that team. So United have acted early. They've got their man. And he's got the whole full pre-season to have a look at his squad and who he wants and who he doesn't want. So, yeah, look, you know, Manchester United, not a good season this season. So how will that affect their pricing for next season? Very interested to have a look at that. And, of course, there are going to be options. You know, you can't say that the likes of Luke Shaw and Bruno Fernandes and David De Gea won't be back on our radars next year, because I think they will.
Well, of course, we'll also have three promoted teams joining us. Conveniently, Mark, you are a Forest fan. They could make a return to the top flight. Are you confident, if they do it, that we're filling our teams with Steve Cooper's side? Or are you going to tell me you're too superstitious and you don't want to talk about it at this point?
No, I think if Forest make it, and that's still a big if, obviously, of the three teams, we've probably got players that will be tempting. Like Fulham have lost Carvalho, so they've lost their kind of great midfield hope, if you like. Forrest has still got theirs, and if we come up and hold on to him, he's going to be a midfielder, I would have thought, and therefore around, what, 6 million, 6.5 at the most? Could be outstanding. The thing about Brennan is he's got a final product. You know, he does deliver goals and assists. He's got ice in his veins, and I think he'll continue to impress in the Premier League. And then obviously there's Jed Spence, who is an outstanding wing back. If he stays at Forest, or if he goes to another club in the Premier League, he's someone you've got to look for. If he's going to get 30 starts, he's going to be right up there. So I'm very enthusiastic about the Forest assets, and hopefully that doesn't sting me if we do make it.
Whatever happens, Mark, good luck getting tickets for Wembley, firstly. Enjoy it. And potentially we'll be seeing Nottingham Forest in the Premier League next season. And if we do, there's some options there for us in FPL too. We'll also have two familiar sides returning to the top flight. Fulham and Bournemouth were both promoted automatically from the Championship. And yes, we all want to know, is Alexander Mitrovic going to be our budget forward of choice again? Or maybe it'll be Bournemouth's Dominic Solanke. We asked a content creator from each club to tell us who we should be looking out for.
Hey guys, Sammy here from the Fulhamish podcast. And I think the question I'm expecting a lot this summer as a Fulham fan from my mates who play FPL will be, should I pick Alexander Mitrovic? Will he continue his goal scoring run from this season in the Championship where he got 43 goals? And my inkling would be to say yes, I do think that he will have a good season. Marco Silva has built this Fulham team around Mitrovic. He's very influential in our all-round play, and that's evident by the fact he actually got 7 assists in addition to the 43 that he scored this year. Elsewhere in the Fulham team, I think you've got to be looking at Harry Wilson, 19 assists, 10 goals for Fulham. Yes, I know that's at Championship level, but I think he'll be pretty determined to prove that he can make his name in the Premier League too. So I expect him to be involved in any Fulham goals next season. Elsewhere, I'm not sure there's a huge amount of value. I think Tosin is the only player guaranteed to start next season in defence and goalkeeper from our existing squad. And he's not particularly well known for his goal scoring. So really, my two, Mitrovic, maybe Wilson, if you're looking for a bit of value going into next season, unless we sign anyone major, which fingers crossed we will.
Hi, it's Tom here, Bournemouth fan from the Back of the Net YouTube channel. In terms of FPL and Bournemouth players to look out for, I think a couple of obvious ones would be Dominic Solanke, who hit 29 goals in the league last season. Obviously in the Championship, but if he can keep that up and if he's at a decent price, I think he will still bag goals. He will still have the responsibility of being Bournemouth's main man. And also at the other end of the pitch, Mark Travers in goal. He had an unbelievable season for Bournemouth. He'll be in goal, and his save ratio and the amount of saves he'll probably have in a game, he could be a good tip. And then also maybe Lloyd Kelly. He is the captain. You know, he's guaranteed to be playing every week. He is the skipper of the side. And Scott Parker and the way Bournemouth like to play is quite pragmatic. And I don't think we'll concede a load of goals. So Lloyd Kelly could be one to watch as well.
Yes, very much looking forward to seeing both Bournemouth and Fulham back in the Premier League. And that's where we're going to leave you on the official Fantasy Premier League podcast for this season. A massive thank you once again to all of our wonderful panellists. And of course, to those that joined us today, Lee, Mark and Jules. Jules, we've particularly enjoyed your tips like Aaron Ramsdale. Maybe you could have told us a triple captain Richarlison though. Next year we want that advice on the podcast.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Actually, I think you did, didn't you? Maybe the lesson we all need to take forward, guys, is listen to Jules a little bit more.
Wow.
I never thought I would say that. I think we need to end this podcast before I give him too many compliments and his head gets even bigger. A massive thank you to everyone at home as well for listening to us throughout the season. We hope we've managed to give you a few useful tips and tricks along the way. And most importantly, offer a bit of FPL entertainment between the game weeks. If you've enjoyed the podcast this year, please do give us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. For all the latest FPL news, keep an eye on fantasy.premierleague.com, and good luck plotting those teams for next season. Remember, the planning has to start now. Goodbye.